What are we fighting for? What are you fighting for? I don't know if you've asked that question lately. With a series like this called Fight For It, I feel like it's most appropriate if we at least define that. What is it that we're fighting for? Sometimes we've got to wonder, right? You ever have those moments in life, those little tiny snippets in life that kind of stick out in your memory? And you don't even know why. You don't know why you remember those moments. I'm going to share one with you really quickly where I asked the question, what are you fighting for? I was in the gym, not the last time I've been in the gym, but pretty close to that, about 15 years ago. It was a YMCA. It was a YMCA before, actually, they went with just the Y. So that's how long ago it was. And I remember this guy that was in there. He looked great. He looked like he knew his way around the gym, the kind of guy that doesn't skip leg day, or any day for that matter. He was wearing one of those, you remember that little spandex thing that wrestlers wore, you know, the onesie? He was wearing one of those while he was working out, and I gotta be honest with you, he looked fantastic in it. It was working for him. Me, that would not go so well, but for this guy, it was going great. And I was over on the treadmill or elliptical, you know, trying to dodge any hard work at the moment. And he was, I think he had been doing some squats. And so after the squats, he would go over into the mirror, one of those full-length mirrors, you know, that make you really regret the fact that you're even at the gym. And he's standing there and he sticks his leg out like this. He had just done these squats. And then he'd go, huh. And he would just like watch his like muscle jiggle in the mirror. And I'll never forget that. And he did it like 5 times. This was not like, I just want to do it and see what happens. Like, he couldn't care less who was in the gym at this moment. It was just him under a spotlight by himself in the mirror. Hah! Like this. Hah! And I don't really have a big point to that story. Other than, if you are here today, sir, well done. No, I remember thinking at the moment, what is all this for? Like, what is this guy fighting for? Like, he was going to have this epic moment in his life where he was going to be dating someone over at her apartment, and she's like, oh my goodness, I can't open the pickles. And he just like goes, I'm like, what's it all for? Like, what are we working for? What are we fighting for? Great question to kick us off in the series. What is it that you're fighting for? Here's what I want to try to convince us in this series. I feel convinced of it, but I really want to convince you. There are certain times in life where you're going to be inclined to fight against something, and instead, I want just us to be willing to, be open to fighting for something. Spoiler alert, right here from the beginning, we titled the series, Fight For It, How to Build Resilience. What I want to convince all of us to fight for is resilience. Resilience is it's an incredibly important value in life. It's an incredibly important thing to have in life. And just to use a simple definition, we'll go with this one, that resilience essentially is just bouncing back from disruption. All of us have disruption in life, right? Something has disrupted your day-to-day already. Something has disrupted your week. In fact, if you would be so bold, be so honest, I know we can't do this at everywhere we are, but at least here in the room, anybody have a disruption lately that you want to just shout out? Give me something that's disrupted your life lately. Traffic. Yeah, thank you, sir. And the way you said it with so much mood, you know? Traffic. Somebody over here said something? Pollen. Oh, my goodness. Great one. Thank you. It is springtime. Spring has sprung. Anything else? Any other? The whales? Is that what you said? Layoffs, that's significant. Yeah, whales trying to be funny. Layoffs, not so much. That's pretty serious. Honestly, though, that really does, that spotlights what I want to talk about, that there are things that we can joke about, you know, like the weather, too much rain, too much sun, too much pollen, too much heat. There's traffic. There's your car battery that died. There's your iPhone that didn't have enough, you know, cell service in the moment, or your battery that wasn't operating like it needed to be, or your computer troubles, or we could go on and on the spectrum of disruption. We could get to, you know, relational challenges. You got something going on with your kids, something going on with your parents, you know, maybe rebellious kids and aging parents, or aging kids and rebellious parents. I don't know, one of the two. you know, and then you've got health problems, health complications, job layoff, quite a bit more significant. There's a whole litany of disruptions that move from ones that are not that significant, that can, you know, that can be like little spurs in our day, all the way to ones that just completely mess us up. The idea of resilience is really what allows us to bounce back from any of those disruptions. And so for the sake of our conversation today, I would love to, my biggest fear, honestly, about this message is I know there are people in life who are going through significant stuff. And to think that I'm going to offer any kind of advice or any kind of emotional satisfaction to some of the more difficult stuff that you're going through is just silly. It's almost absurd. But I really believe that God has something for us, and I want to talk more about the more simple ones, the ones that seem less important, because they're actually related to the bigger ones. And resilience is the thing that connects them all. Being resilient is the ability to bounce back, to roll with the punches, and to deal with the potentially adverse situations in a more positive and creative way. This actually, resilience involves seeing a challenge more like an opportunity to learn and to get involved with it to such a point that it has a minimal cost on your physical and mental state. Disruptions really involve change, right? I mean, it's any kind of change in life. I read this quote the other day about change that I thought was so well said. Change is avalanching upon our heads, and most people are grotesquely unprepared to cope with it. Wow, Alvin, what was happening in your life in the moment when you wrote this, right? But this is so true, though, I think, that all of us are experiencing that at different times in our life this avalanche of change, and most of us, we're just not prepared to deal with it. I know I'm not as prepared as I want to be to deal with the change, and the reason why is because of the uncertainty of it, right? You don't know it's coming. You can't see it coming. You don't know it's out there. So whether or not you consider yourself a resilient person or not, I just want you to know that whatever is happening right now, those little, sometimes less meaningful disruptions are building something that can get us ready for those bigger ones. I want to give you just a little word picture, a little chart, a little graph, if we could. I like this board because it just sometimes, well, you know, we're all visual learners in different ways, and sometimes it's just good to see it in a different way. Let's just title this Bouncing Back. Some of you maybe have seen something like this or used something like this at work, if you work in a corporate setting or even in an academic institution or maybe in a health institution. You've seen a curve kind of like this. We've got a y-axis. I went to Georgia Tech. That's about all I learned. And you've got an x-axis right here. You've got down here, let's put time. So this is the amount of time. And then up here, we've got this really awesome word, your morale, right? You know, how you're feeling about your life. The way change happens, the way disruptions happen is, you know, it hits us and there's this moment of denial where we just ignore it and you go, this surely can't be. And then all of a sudden, there's this huge decline in our morale and we spend some time down there in the valley. But then there's a way that we can actually come back and it can be actually something that's to our benefit. You know this to be true. This has happened in your own life where you've experienced some kind of change or some kind of brokenness or some kind of thing that you just couldn't fix. And you thought it was all for your bad. You thought this is all awful. And then on the other side of it, you actually got to a place where you were better for it. And that's the way sometimes disruption or change can work, right? That's not crazy to think about that. What's interesting, though, is that somebody came along at some point and said, hey, you know, this experience that we're having with this change, these disruptions, these trials, it's actually similar. If you overlay the stages of grief on top of this, it actually aligns quite perfectly. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross gave us, I think it was, you know, 40, 50 years ago, gave us these stages of grief. It actually does begin with denial, not just a river in Egypt, right? And then you've got this right here, anger. Anger includes some kind of blame, right? Where you're not only blaming other people, which is the way it originally starts usually, and then you end up blaming yourself. Like, this is my fault. I did something wrong. I'm the guilty one. You move into bargaining right here, where you bargain with God, or you bargain with the person, or let's say your car battery died. You're even bargaining with your car. You know, come on, please. Start. If you start, I promise you I'll get your oil changed. You know, whatever it may be. I promise you when the oil change person says, hey, there's a couple upgrades you need, I promise I'll listen and not just disregard them. You know, whatever it is, you start bargaining. And then you move down here to despair, which is a very serious emotion, right? This is despair or depression. This is the valley when it all kind of settles in on you. And then over here, you've got acceptance, where you begin to accept the disruption or the change. You start seeing potential outcomes. You start seeing it in a more positive way. And then all the way up here, we have thriving, the ability to thrive, not just make it through, not just survive, but actually thrive. What I've learned about resilience, real simply, here at the beginning of this series, is this, that resilience, always a bit of a tricky word to spell, resilience is a catalyst. Resilience is what allows us to get through this curve with more speed, with more quickness, a shorter amount of time. But it's also a catalyst that allows us to experience the change or the disruption with less impact, right? It's not as heavy on us. Let me just tell you a quick story. Our five-year-old at the time, her name is Sally. She's now six. She just had a birthday recently. She found out in the school year about some sad news. See, as parents, she's our third child, and so sending her off to kindergarten, I thought would be a breeze, but it was just as emotionally devastating as the first two. I mean, you just can't believe it. You're like, how are we here already that this amazing little baby has grown up and is now ready for kindergarten? Like, I'm not prepared for that emotionally. And so the summer leading up into the school year, Jenny, my wife, and I started, Jenny is my wife, that was not Jenny, comma, my wife, and I. It's Jenny, my wife, and I. We were praying about, our prayer for her was real simple. God, would you please just let her make one friend? We kept the bar really low. We're not asking for everything, just one friend. I mean, you know, I mean, this is still true for us, that, you know, in your job, whatever it is that you do, you just need a friend, right? And so we prayed, God, please, just one friend. And sure enough, first week of school, she meets a cute little girl that she becomes friends with, and we just were overjoyed. I mean, we were so grateful. Oh my goodness, God, you provided. We didn't know if you would, and you did. We were so thankful. And then a couple weeks ago, we learned that this girl has a mom who works at the school, and the school system has moved the mom to a different school, and the girl is moving schools, and she's not going to be in next year in the same school. And we were both just devastated. I was devastated. I didn't cry, though, which my wife was wondering, like, what's your problem, you know? Because she cried multiple days about this. And I would come home and tell her, like, mop it up. What's your problem, you know? That didn't go well. Then I took a different strategy. You know, then I went with, yeah, this is a real big deal because you're still so close with all those people you went to kindergarten with. Right? That didn't work either. So then I try to enter into the emotion, you know, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this is really sad. Like, I'm not making light of it. This is a big deal. This is terrible. I can't believe this is happening. And so there was a particular day where Sally came home and told my wife that she had found out the news that her friend was leaving. And my wife texted me at work. She's like, hey, Sally found out that her friend's leaving. So I came home that day, you know, thinking I was going to find her in this, you know, complete mess of a kindergartner, but she was out jumping on the trampoline, and so I go find her. I'm like, hey, Sally, I heard you found out the news about your friend. Are you okay? And she just looks at me, and she goes, oh, yeah, it's cool. I just told her we'll just have to have more play dates. And I was like, hey, listen, I think you really need to process the emotion of this. This is a bigger deal than you're letting on. No, I didn't. I was just like, that's cool. Like, what an amazing thing. Isn't it amazing how kids have the ability to actually move through this curve with such quickness, right? I mean, for her, it was like this, you know? And this right here lasted about 6 seconds, you know? It was just a tiny little blip on her radar. And it's amazing how life works that way, that we as adults are just, we just have a harder time with disruption, with change, with trials. And what resilience does, resilience, I have found, it's like getting a TSA pre-check security clearance. You still got to go through TSA, but you just learn to do it with less speed and less stress, more speed and less stress, less time and less stress. That's really what resilience is all about. Now, I don't want you to take my word for any of this. You shouldn't do that in general in life. You should really test things out. But even more than that, I want to introduce you to someone who actually taught about resilience, who had experienced some significant things that had proven that he had actually had to understand resilience in a way that most of us will never have to. This guy's name is James. James is famous because he is the brother of Jesus. Yeah, pretty big deal. You know, he's growing up and his brother's like, hey man, just want to let you know, I'm from God. James like, not, that's totally fine, man. Like me too. We all are. You know, what's the big deal? And then he's like, no. I don't think you understand. I am God. And he's like, all right, well, listen, that's cool if you want to believe that. But when we get to school, please don't tell our friends that, okay? That's embarrassing. That's weird. That's bizarre. Then, obviously, his brother believed it so deeply that he actually gave his life. He began to do miracles that proved that he really was God. But then he also actually gave his life for this. And then eventually was resurrected from the dead, which is what we celebrate at Easter. And it was at that moment that James actually put his faith in what his brother had said. Oh my goodness, my brother really is God himself, God in flesh. James got that far with Jesus, which is just absolutely amazing. And James actually believed it so deeply that he gave his life for it. Somewhere between 62 and 66 AD, James actually was martyred for what he believed. That what he believed was so dangerous that eventually he was stoned for it. Some people think that he was beaten with a club for it and gave his life up. So this guy really knows about resilience. This isn't just a guy who got through a breakup in middle school. This is pretty significant stuff. And what James says in this letter that he writes to Jewish believers who were now following Jesus, he tells them a little bit about some of the trials that they're going to be facing and how to handle them, how to deal with these disruptions, these changes. This is in James, very beginning of his little letter that he wrote, James 1, verse 2. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters. I love that. It's very warm. You're my brother. You're my sister. I'm not preaching at you. I'm really trying to encourage you. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Whenever you face trials of many kinds. He's not saying if you do, he's saying when you do, because trials, change, disruption, it's like that these terms are, they're related to, they're akin to, they're cousins with death and taxes, right? Everybody's going to experience them, one for one death rate, everybody's going to be responsible to pay taxes, and we're all going to experience trials. Trials are like tests, and in school, tests are meant to help you pass and not pass out, right? And James is going to tell us that the way you think about the trial, the attitude you have about the trial will determine how you handle the trial. How well you do is determined by your attitude, which is why he begins by saying, consider it pure joy. This little verb here, we don't understand all of its meaning because it was written in another language. It was written in Koine Greek, which none of us speak, none of us can really read, but I've taken a class called Computer Tools for Biblical Exegesis, and so I have a little thing that allows me to click on it, which tells me more about what it means. And this little verb doesn't just mean consider it, it means lead yourself to the point where you believe it. Regard it as so. Train yourself to see it differently and believe that it's true. He's not saying, I'm asking you to be joyful for the trial. He doesn't say that. He's saying, would you consider it that you could have joy in the trial? See, we make ourselves more and less vulnerable based on how we think about things. The way we think about them is so important. When you come into an event, when an event happens, do you conceptualize it as traumatic or do you see it as an opportunity to learn and grow? Events are only as traumatic as we experience them, choose to believe them to be. How do I know this? Because this has been proven over time. You know this to be true. There was a longitudinal study done a couple of years ago. It was over a 30-year period where they took this group of kids, 600 some odd kids in an inner city, and they followed them throughout life. They tested them both quantitatively and also qualitatively through interviews and studies to try to figure out what is the difference between the kids that are able to succeed in life and the kids that are not, the kids that get bombarded by some of the circumstances that surround all of them. And what they found was that the most resilient children had what they term as an internal locus of control. Some of you remember that phrase from your Psychology 101 class. I was not paying attention if I was even there, so I had to look it up. The internal locus of control, that's that thing in you that you believe, hey, I am actually control. That I, not my circumstances, are what affect my achievements. The study said that resilient children actually saw their own future as something that they could determine. These resilient kids saw that they actually could impact the world, not that the world had to impact them. It was all about their perspective. It was all about how they saw the world. This is essentially what James is telling us. He's saying, hey, if you would choose to consider it pure joy, then you actually could have a different experience on life, that you could actually be an orchestrator of your own fate. Life is not happening to you. No, you are happening to life. This is what he's telling us. He's saying, so consider it joy. Consider that there's something good in it when you go through trial. He continues and says this, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. That when your faith gets tested, it actually produces this next level of richness, of depth. Just by a show of hands, how many of you are endurance athletes? I love that phrase. How many of you do marathons, triathlons? Fantastic. I don't understand you. I don't get you. I am wildly impressed by you, but I do not get it. Here's why. It's not that I don't understand athletics or sports. I get competition. But when I was growing up, when you played sports and you did something that you weren't supposed to do, what did the coaches make you do? Yeah, they made you do endurance sports. They made you run. And so I've always equated running with punishment. And so I see you and I'm just going, I don't get it. I don't get why you are pushing yourself to do the kind of things that you're doing. But I would imagine that you would agree that you have built this sort of perseverance, this level of endurance. And it didn't just start by jumping out there one day going, I'm going to get me one of those 26.2 stickers. You know, I'm going to go run one of those marathons. No, you started probably with, I'm going to run a mile. I'm going to run a couple miles. I'm going to run a 5K. I'm going to run a 10K. I'm going to run a half. I'm going to run a full. Some of you do those like super extra ones, you know. You're incredibly peculiar. I mean, honestly, there aren't many of you in the world. You are a unicorn. You are chosen by God, special, amazing. You might be the special, you know, like you are a really remarkable person to be able to do that. But it's all about building something. It's training for something. It's working out this perseverance, and not just perseverance to survive, but the ability to thrive. But then James is going to give us a payoff. He's going to say, look, if you would consider it joy when you go through the trial, it'll develop this thing in you, this depth of perseverance that will lead to something. And he gives us the promise, the payoff. He gives us the purpose. He tells us what it's really all about in James 1, verse 4. He says, let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. This is it. This is the promise. He's saying, hey, for you to get to where you want to go, you got to go through the stuff that you're in the middle of. See, our temptation when it comes to trying to become a more mature, become a more complete person where we're not lacking anything, is to avoid pain. He says, no. You're going to try to fight against it with everything that you have. But I'm telling you, instead of fighting against it, would you consider fighting for it? Instead of fighting against the pain, would you consider fighting for the resilience that's being built in you? I mean, this is the way we get ready for tomorrow. See, I don't know, obviously, we've got all kinds of situations and circumstances and experiences going on in life right now. Some of you might be in the middle of something incredibly significant. But some of you, maybe you're just having a good season of life right now. But the truth for all of us, and I'm not trying to be fatalistic or trying to be depressing or trying to scare you, but there's something around the corner for all of us, right? I mean, there's something coming for all of us that we do not know about. And instead of fighting against these little disruptions, the little change James says, would you consider that there's actually something in it for you to learn in the annoying person that you work with, in the traffic that you bump into, in the disruption in your life, that there's actually something in it for you. There's something for you to learn that if you would learn, if you would build it, if you would take it in and allow it to have its way, that it would actually get you ready for what's coming tomorrow. No matter how much resilience you have today, it would benefit you to have more for tomorrow. So would you consider not fighting against it, but fighting for it? I've found that we only win in life. We only win in the big trials when we fight for it in the small trials, right? That's actually the way you win in life. You win in life by fighting for resilience in the small ones so that you're ready for the big ones. Do you remember that little children's story going on a bear hunt? You remember that? Anybody? Going on a bear hunt. You're going to catch a big one. And then you go through all this stuff, right? You know, you go through you got to run across the field. You got to go through the brush. You got to go through the creek. You got to go through the water. Starts raining. You got to go through the rain. And what's the big line out of the story is that you can't go over it. You can't go under it. You can't go around it. You got to go through it. You got to go through it. Yeah. And some of you were like, you didn't get that exactly right. You missed some words there. Okay, well, I'm a generalist, all right? So in general, that's the ballpark of the story, right? I don't know the exact words. I don't need you to remind me of them either. Thank you. But you can't go over it. You can't go under it. You can't go around it. You got to go through it. That's the same thing for the trials that are in front of us. Is that everything in you is going to want to go around it. Everything in you is going to want to go over it or go under it. But James is saying, hey, if you want to get better for it, you've got to go right through it. And if you will go right through it on the ones that are smaller, that seem less significant, you will build something up. There is a catalyst that will happen in you that will allow you to squeeze the graph. You'll squeeze the curve. You'll start to learn how to get through it faster and get through it with less impact so that God can make you into the person that he wants to make you into. In fact, I don't know exactly what God's purpose specifically is for your life, but I just know for me and I know for you in general, the purpose for all of our lives is that we would become the person that God wants us to be. That's probably the prayer that you have for your kids or for your siblings or for your parents. That God, that you would allow us to become the person that you want me to be. And the only way to become that person is to go through the trial. And as you go through the small ones, you build up your resilience so that when the bigger ones come, that they don't actually take you out. No, see, that's what resilience is. Resilience is actually the difference between the trial taking you out and instead taking you to where you want to go and to where God wants to take you. That's what resilience is. It's the difference between this disruption damaging your life, destroying your world, and actually getting you to a place where you can not just get through it, but become the person that God wants you to become. That's what resilience is. So maybe if you're asking, well where do I start? What's the first step in this process? I really think it's in finding the purpose for the pain, finding the purpose for the problem that you're in, finding the purpose for the trial. And I know when it comes to the bigger ones, that's more difficult. And if you're in the middle of it, I don't want to trivialize what you're going through. Now might not be the time to find the purpose. But when it comes to the smaller ones, you've got to see the purpose. You've got to see that there's more, that there's something God is doing to develop you and grow you. It's a change of perspective. It's a simple switch of a question. See, most people, and I found this to be true in my own life, most people ask this question when they're in the middle of pain, in the middle of trouble, in the middle of trials: why is this happening to me? Have you ever asked that? You ever ask the question, God, I mean, seriously, what is up with this? Again, are you kidding me? This is ridiculous. And maybe you sanitize your prayers, maybe you don't, but we've all asked the question, why? Why is this happening to me? Instead, I think James is encouraging us to maybe ask a different question. There's nothing wrong with why is this happening to me? There's certainly a season for that, but would you consider asking this question, God, what are you trying to grow in me? What are you trying to grow in me? I'm not trying to figure out, did you cause this or did it just happen? I don't know, but it's happening. And if it's happening, God can redeem it. He can bring something good out of it. He can actually get you to the point where you look back on it and you go, wow, I would have never become the person I am without it. I'm not saying I like it. I would never wish it upon anyone, but God used it to build something in me. And it's not just for today, but he's building something in me for tomorrow, for the next one that's coming. And God, if I continue to let you have your way with me, you're going to grow me into the kind of person that can get through these faster with less impact. That's what you want. That's me becoming mature and becoming complete. See, this world that we live in, this is a dangerous, broken world, right? I don't need to tell you that. Now, that's just common that people accept that. I mean, everybody knows there's just a lot out there. There's a lot of ways to get your heart broken in this world. See, maybe you could say it this way, that we as a group of people, we're more vulnerable than we have ever been. There might be more today that could take us out than ever before. But here's what I want God to emblazon on our hearts, is that, yeah, we might be more vulnerable than we've ever been, but we are stronger than we could ever imagine. And we are stronger than we could have ever imagined, because we have a God who says, hey, I'm not leaving you. I'm going to be right there with you. I am the God of the mountain. I'm the God of the good, but I'm the God of the valley. I'm the God of the wilderness. I'm the God of the bad. See, this is what Jesus reminded us of, right? I mean, we sometimes hang on to these promises of God, like, God, if we follow you, everything's going to be great. Well, we all know that's not true. There's all kinds of pain, and just because you put your faith in Jesus, just because you decide to follow Jesus, it doesn't mean you're impervious to the pain. It doesn't mean that you get to avoid the pain. No, sometimes it's even worse. But Jesus himself reminded us of this. He promised this. In fact, this little verse is the verse that I choose to use at funerals, because it really holds inside of it the reality of life and the hope of the future. The reality of this life and the potential of what the next life could look like. In John 16, verse 33, Jesus said this. You've probably heard it before. He said, I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. We're about to sing a song that really encapsulates what Jesus said. In me, you can have peace. And then he says, oh, by the way, in this world you will have peace. You'll have trouble, you will. To which none of us are like, what? No, God, we get it, we know. We understand that more than we understand just about anything. In this world, you will have trouble. And then he gives us this little phrase. It's not even three words, it's one word with this big, huge, awesome meaning packed in it. He says, but take heart. But take heart. Hold up your hope. Pick yourself up, keep your chin up, keep your eyes fixed on me, take heart. I know there's trouble in the world, but there's something good that I'm about to tell you. And then he concludes this. He says, with these five powerful words, he says, for I have overcome the world. I have overcome the world. And at this point, when he said this, they didn't even know what this meant. They didn't even understand the reality of it. But he's begging them, he's imploring them, he's challenging them. Listen, I know the trouble's coming, but I'm just telling you, in the trouble, you can take heart because I'm doing something in it. I'm doing something in you. I didn't cause it. I hate that it's happening, but it will not be lost. It will not be wasted. You can believe with as much assurance as you have that I am going to use it for your good. I'm going to bring something good out of the most broken parts of life. And in the middle of it all, I'm going to build a resilience in you that will make you better. It will make you more mature. It will make you more complete so that you never lack anything. Do you remember the movie Jerry Maguire? What's the most famous line in Jerry Maguire?
Show me the money.
Show me the money. What's the second most famous line in Jerry Maguire? You complete me. As I was reading this verse, I just thought, maybe that's what God wants us to do with our trials. I mean, I know this is crazy, this is bizarre, but maybe he wants us to look at our trials and say, I don't like you. I don't really want you, but you complete me. I can't get to where I'm trying to go without you. And as awful as you are, as much as this is, it stinks. I don't know why you're moving. I don't know why the job is changing. I don't know why the relationship broke. I don't know why the finances are trouble. I don't know why the pollen is as high as it is. I don't know. I just know that he can use it. He can build something in us. That your pain, your trials, they complete you. And building resilience, it will not happen passively. It doesn't happen by just wishing for it or hoping for it. You can't just get the magic fairy dust sprinkled on you. No. You've got to fight for it. Building resilience happens when you fight for it. When you don't back down. When you show up. When you stand up. When you walk right through it, even as scary as it feels.